Hello and welcome to this edition of the Modern Mobility Podcast. I'm Alyssa Wood.
And I'm Colin Steele.
And this edition goes with our April issue of the eZine, in which our cover story by our news writer here for our Search AWS.com site, Beth Pariseau, looks into the mobile portfolio of Amazon and sort of how they are becoming a bigger player, especially with mobile app development in this space.
Yes, Amazon gets a lot of publicity and buzz around their infrastructure and platform as a service capabilities, but they also have a lot when it comes to enterprise mobility and helping people develop and deploy and manage mobile applications. So we explore that in this issue and talk a little bit about, you know, what they could do down the line to make themselves a really serious contender in the market.
And you also looked at IBM and after their Interconnect conference, kind of the new things coming out with mobile from them and incorporating Swift into Bluemix as well.
Yes, they're another company that usually is more on the infrastructure side of things, but they are taking mobility a lot more seriously these days. They support Apple's Swift programming language in their Bluemix cloud for developing not just mobile apps, but also for developing cloud apps now. And Amazon also just added support for Bluemix, or not for Bluemix, for Swift as well. So Swift is really picking up steam, and these two companies are leading that charge in the enterprise. And IBM is also teaming up with some of their competitors in the enterprise mobility management market to form a group called the App Config Community, and they're focused on promoting mobile application management standards. So in that group, it's being led by VMware, AirWatch, IBM, Jamf Software, and MobileIron.
And also in this issue, I've interviewed in our FaceTime Q&A Daniel Nenni, who is the founder of SemiWiki.com, a website forum for semiconductor professionals. And he's just come out with a book titled Mobile Unleashed, The Origin and Evolution of ARM Processors in Our Devices. So I chatted with Daniel about kind of the future of mobile and how chips play a big role in that and kind of the history of semiconductors and microchips in these devices and how it's changed the mobile landscape. What does modern mobility mean to you?
Well, you know, I've been in Silicon Valley for the last 30 years. In the semiconductor industry. So I've seen the mobility movement from the inside, and a lot of the companies that I've worked with are involved in mobility. And, you know, right now it is an always-on situation. And I also have four children, so I have four millennials, and I see how their mobility is. And, you know, it really has changed. It's on 24/7. You know, it is a critical part of our life, and, you know, that's what we really wrote about in the book, is how this all evolved. So this is actually the second book we have written. The first book was The Evolution of Semiconductors and How Semiconductors Enabled the Mobile Devices. The second book is Mobile Unleashed, and it's the origin and evolution of ARM processors in our devices. And so what we do is we look at the history of ARM, but the second half of the book is the history of the companies that really did the transformation. So it is the history of Apple Computer. It is the history of Samsung. It is the history of Qualcomm. Nokia's in there. MediaTek's in there. Intel's in there. So we look at the companies that really changed the mobile landscape, you know, over the last 10 to 15 years.
So if you can kind of, I'm sure it's hard to do, give a quick summary just of the book, you know, in those two sections, what are the major points there in the history of ARM? Let's start with that. You know, what did you guys find out as you were going to write this?
Well, you know, the interesting thing, and this is the case with a lot of technology companies, is they weren't initially charted with becoming a mobile company. Mm-hmm. So they kind of happened along the mobile trails by making mistakes in other areas. They were actually going to compete in the personal computer market. And, you know, this was 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is when PCs were just starting to become on everybody's desk. And, you know, they're in the UK, and the UK wanted to have their own presence in the personal computer market. And ARM partnered with Olivetti, who was then a big communications company with personal computers. But What they found is they developed something that really was more applicable to low-power devices. And so it was a CPU that would fit in a computer, but it wasn't as powerful as what Intel and AMD had. Mm-hmm. But it was very unique in it had a reduced instruction set, and it was very low power. And so they were able to happen upon a relationship with Apple, and that really is what transformed the company. So, you know, initially, this was not their charter. They probably never would have gone down this way had it not been for Apple. I don't know if you remember Apple's first portable device. It was a PDA, I guess. Mm-hmm. That was what they worked on with ARM. So that was their first project, and it wasn't a success, of course, but that led to the successes of the iPod and the iPhone and the iPad. So this was a very close partnership between ARM and Apple that enabled both of those companies to be successful in the mobile market.
Interesting. So, and like you said, you know, they were not really a mobile company to start out with. And I think that that's sort of mirrored in a lot of different companies today. We cover a lot about enterprise mobility management. And again, there's a lot of companies that are not originally, you know, that was not part of their suites, whether they were doing, you know, desktop virtualization or something like that. And now companies like VMware and Citrix and things like that, and all the end user technologies are folding that mobile part in. So, you know, I know you said the book also touches on kind of the history of these different mobile companies. So what were the big mobile companies, you know, then, and what are the companies that are going to be the big ones going into the future?
Well, you know, the big companies, they're really in two forms. One is the fabless semiconductor company, and Qualcomm is who really invented this industry of the SoCs that fit inside our smartphones. And so, you know, my first phones were, I guess they call them feature phones, but they were kind of dumb phones. It was just a regular phone. So it didn't require a lot of intelligence, but smartphones required a microprocessor similar to what you have in a PC, but mm-hmm. it had to be very small and low power, and it had to encompass many more features of a computer on one chip. So an SoC is a system on chip. And if you look at Qualcomm, they have a similar story. They started out as a trucking communications company. They did not start out mm-hmm. as a mobile company, per se, and they developed chips that were then transformed into the smartphone market. But, you know, that's one market segment, because many companies can use this chip, you know, just buy this chip and make their own phones. In parallel, Apple developed their own chips. So the iPhone, the first iPhone had their own SoC inside. Mm-hmm. And so you really have two market segments. The systems companies who make everything, you know, Apple has their operating system, their phone, and their SoC and the chips inside. And then you have the companies that just adopt other people's chips. And Samsung started that way. They use Qualcomm chips. And, you know, Samsung is one of the top mobile companies, of course. Mm-hmm. So that was two different directions. But what's happened lately and moving forward, more systems companies are creating their own chips. Mm-hmm. So Samsung now creates their own SoC. Huawei is another big mobile company in China, of course, but they're bringing phones out to other countries mm-hmm. shortly. They create their own chip now. You know, they start using Qualcomm chips, and then now they create their own. And the reason why they do that is it's a fiercely competitive business, and they have to be able to add some value. And, you know, Apple has an advantage. They control the operating system. Mm-hmm. They control everything. And so they can really package that together with a very unique customer experience. If you're using chips from other vendors that other companies are using the same chips, it's a little harder to differentiate, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, our sort of device expert here at technologyguide.com was just telling me about how Huawei had a new phone at CES, and they're kind of the, you know, number three smartphone maker, I guess, and big in China. And I'm curious if you think, you know, there are different companies like that that will kind of, you know, kind of heat up the competition in this market and become bigger even in the U.S.?
Yes, I think that is the case. And, you know, it really starts with people assembling components to build their own phone, and then, you know, they learn how to do it, and then they realize they need to, you know, control their own supply chain and build their own things. Apple, I grew up with Apple computers because I'm here in Silicon Valley, and I saw them, you know, up close transform from a computer company to not only, you know, the leading mobility company, but also the one of the largest and most influential fabless semiconductor companies. And it was quite an interesting transformation. They did that by acquiring small companies. And, you know, I worked in Silicon Valley at different companies. Several of my companies were acquired as well. So people acquire this technology and then build their own knowledge base and their own, you know, complete system. And what you're going to see is Google is doing the same. Amazon is doing the same. Amazon just bought a fabless semiconductor company. And, you know, the nice thing about SemiWiki is, you know, we started this all, there's a few of us, we're all semiconductor professionals, we have day jobs, we work in the semiconductor ecosystem, so we actually know, you know, what's going on here. So we started SemiWiki as an open forum, you know, and we have, you know, over 100,000 people every month contributing to this website now, and we get to see the traffic patterns, we get to see who's reading what, and we get to really see what the trends are, and we've taken this information and created these books. So if you've been reading SemiWiki for the last 5 years, really the books are just an encapsulation of what we've discovered from the readership and the contributions on SemiWiki.
Interesting. Well, since you bring up the book too, I'm just curious what the process is like for starting that when you have an idea, you know, from of what content you want to put in the book. How do you go about writing it, and who did you talk to for it? You know, what was the process there?
Yeah. So, you know, the premise behind the book, and I was the person who started both the books, is you really have to understand how you got to where you are today to better enable decisions about where you're going tomorrow. So I'm very firm in that belief. And so, you know, we did the history of the fabless semiconductor industry to find out how, you know, Apple became enabled to do their own chips and how Qualcomm became enabled to do their own chips. Because, you know, when this industry first started to be a semiconductor company, you had to build a manufacturing facility. You had, you know, a huge amount of overhead that very few people could enable. So the fabless business is what enabled us to, for everybody to create a chip. You know, anybody can literally just draw a chip on a napkin and then have it manufactured, and some of us have done that. So you look at that and where we are today, where, you know, anybody can create a chip and anybody can create systems. And then what we want to do is find out, you know, where did this mobile stuff start? Because mobility is driving the semiconductor industry now. That's where the majority of the business is. That's where the majority of the innovation is. Mobility people are pushing the edge of technology very fast, Apple specifically, faster than any other industry has, because these phones come out every year. You know, when we did TVs and computers, you buy a TV and computer, you know, maybe every 5 or 10 years, or cars. But these phones, you know, Apple comes out with a new phone every year, and the semiconductor technology has to meet with Apple's cadence of one product per year.
Right.
So we have to create new things every year, and it's daunting. So we really want to figure out how we got to where we are today, and so we can better figure out where we're going tomorrow. And what we actually did is we wrote the book without any input from any of the companies. And what we did was we did the research, we know the people, we were involved in this stuff directly, and we gained information from the articles on SemiWiki. And then once we had the book done, we sent it out to the different companies, and we sent a copy to Arm and said, hey, listen, let us know if something's not correct, because we want to be correct. If you look at the book, we have, I think, 200 endnotes or something, because, you know, we wanted everything to be very factual. And, you know, what's interesting, Arm was the funny one, is it got to, the book was passed along, and it got to one of the founders, and they gave us some corrections. You know, we had some clarifications. But Sir Robin Saxby, you know, one of the founders and the former chairman of the company, who's now retired, he actually loved the book, and he volunteered to write the foreword. And if you read the foreword, it's pretty funny. It's because he clearly states that ARM originated from a failure of his, because, you know, he tried to go into different markets that weren't successful. And so they were very, they were okay, because we we do point out a lot of failures, and we are very blunt in this book. There are no secrets. We all make mistakes, and they were pretty humble about it, and it was very nice. And Qualcomm was the same way. And Apple, unfortunately, didn't want to participate in the book, but since we grew up with Apple, we pretty much knew everything, and we know a lot of people who were acquired by Apple and now are working in other places. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a high degree of accuracy.
Well, it sounds like a fun undertaking. So you have, talking about the history there, looking forward, what are the innovations in smartphones that you think we'll see going forward into the future?
Well, the conclusion we came to is that, there's a lot of industry conferences. So we go to conferences every month, and all the semiconductor people talk about, you know, what's coming. And I think the conclusion of this book is that smartphones are here to stay. You know, some people say, oh, smartphones are stagnating, because of sales or whatever, or maybe Google Glasses is going to replace the smartphone, or maybe you're just going to have, you know, an implant in your head instead of a smartphone. Mm-hmm. But we don't believe that's the case. There's still more innovations to come at the smartphone. We think the next smartphones actually will be wireless. So, you know, right now I'm talking on a headset. We feel they'll be wireless in charging and in the headset, and there'll be better clarity and better quality than what we have today. But I think underlying that, what you're going to see is smarter smartphones. And so, you know, as semiconductor folks, we do the SoCs inside the smartphone. We know what's coming next. And the chips are becoming much more powerful. And you're going to see 5, 10, 20, 100 times more processing power in these smartphones. And, you know, one thing we discovered when we wrote the first book is that today's smartphone has more computing power than NASA had when we sent people to the moon.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's just amazing. And the smarter your phones are, the more capable software you can have, because the user experience has to be good. You can't wait for things. You know, people want things instantly when you push a button, or if you use Siri or something, they want really clear, intelligent responses. So it's the power. And when you look at what performance increases you're going to see in the chips inside the phone, really anything's possible. But we believe the smartphone is going to continue to be the platform of choice. It's going to get much smarter, and that's going to enable not just silicon innovation, but software innovation for, you know, the consumer.
Mm-hmm. And what about wearable devices? Where does that fit in here?
We do talk about wearables, and that is probably one of the more interesting things. You know, Apple came out with a watch and the Fitbit revolution, and you know, all the different wearables. The CES Electronics Conference was last month, and that really was a wearable conference. The two most prominent things there were automotive and wearables. I believe wearables is a market that will develop. You know, right now maybe it's still in the emerging phase, but I think the key to wearables, and what we discovered, is that health and wellness really is the key to wearables. So as we develop health and wellness capabilities for these wearables, they'll be much more prevalent. You know, Fitbit is an example, but it doesn't really give you a huge amount of health and wellness information. There's so much more that you can find out. I was at a conference, and this one company, in fact, it's DARPA-funded, thinks that they can let people know before they have a heart attack.
Wow.
And so if you're wearing a device, it will tell you if you're going to have a catastrophic health event in advance. And, you know, I think that would be great, because I don't think anybody really wants to die in a Starbucks or something like that.
No.
So, you know, I would buy a wearable to get a little bit of heads up there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all right. Thank you so much for chatting with us. Just to end and wrap up here, we have a couple more fun personal questions we ask all of our interview subjects. So to kind of change pace here, what's your all-time favorite movie?
Oh, no, that's going to be embarrassing, because...
That's the point.
it's Caddyshack.
Oh, that's a good one.
I grew up in that period, my wife and I talk about it. I married my college sweetheart, and we have a lot in common of all the movies over the last 35 years, and you know, her favorite is Sound of Music, mm-hmm. and my favorite is Caddyshack. So that kind of tells you, you know, we're a little bit opposite.
Right? Yeah, maybe. okay, so what is the best dish that you can cook?
Oh, well, that's actually good news, because I do most of the cooking in the house.
Okay.
I'm Italian, mm-hmm. and I grew up in a very Italian family, and I can cook just about anything Italian. My wife's favorite is tortellini Alfredo.
Ah, good one.
And but unfortunately now, you know, we're a little bit older, we're empty nesters, so we kind of have to do the low-fat, low-calorie Alfredo sauce.
Yeah, yeah.
But the original Alfredo sauce is the best, of course.
Okay, and last of all, if you could travel anywhere in the world right now, where would you go?
Well, interesting, you know, being in the semiconductor industry, I do a lot of traveling.
Mm-hmm.
So I've traveled around the world for the last 15, 20 years, and I've been to just about every place that I want, and I've been to every state in the United States with the exception of one, and that's Alaska. And my wife and I have just booked a cruise to Alaska.
Oh.
So I'm going to realize that dream, and, you know, I don't know how you visit Alaska, but taking a cruise there, I think, is probably the right thing to do.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard those are pretty cool. And funnily enough, you're not the first person to answer Alaska to that question on this podcast. So maybe I should go. It sounds pretty cool. All right, well, thank you so much for being here, Dan, and it was great chatting with you.
Okay, I appreciate your time.
That wraps up our episode for this month. Please make sure to follow us on Twitter at Modern Mobility. I'm at Colin Steele.
And I'm at AlyssaLaura22.
Thanks for listening.